Hi folks, this is Lauren Hunt with another episode of the Guitar Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again. This is episode number 154. Those of you new to the Guitar Podcast, I want you to know that when I talk about guitars, amps, pedals, and music and all, I'm conveying my opinion from my experience and learning over the years. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Check out the show notes at theguitarpodcast.com/blog. Follow the Guitar Podcast on Facebook. Last but not least, go to theguitarpodcast.net.com, whichever one. Sign up for email alerts where you'll get emails notifying you when a new episode's been released and other timely information regarding the Guitar Podcast. All right, let's get to it. Today, we're going to talk about, hey, did you notice that if you were following me on Facebook within the last maybe 2 or 3 weeks, you'll see that I had my Macintosh MacBook Pro from, 2011, finally bit the dust. I had never had one die the way this one did. It got the blue screen of death. I was just in the middle of just hanging out, watching Pacers play, and perusing some social media, and clicked on a button, and all of a sudden it just started restarting over and over and over again. And I was like, ooh, this is not good. So then I checked out some sites about what might be going on, and tried about every trick I knew from my past of working on Macintoshes and or Apples, MacBooks, and that sort of thing, until I finally broke down and I called Apple support, and they said pretty much probably your motherboard is dead and it's not supported. They don't create them anymore, and that was that. So now it is a 1 terabyte external hard drive. So then last week I went and got a new MacBook Pro finally. So I was all ready to do another episode and everything. And then my computer died. I was like, oh crap. Way to kill momentum, right? So anyway, I got a new MacBook Pro. And since I'm no longer a web designer or graphic designer or doing a whole lot of video editing, other than I do my video editing on my phone, which, you know, it's not as high quality as what, you know, I'd like, but hey, it is what it is. I don't need the larger hard drive, and I've got external hard drives. So I went with the base model, 250 gigabyte hard drive. Sounds like a lot, but nowadays with the software that has to go on there, it's not a whole lot. So, and they want you to use the cloud. Anyway, so, hey, I'm up and running again, obviously, on a new Macintosh, or a new MacBook Pro. However, my old microphone and mixer and all that, the analog input, will not work on a new MacBook. So I had to get a new mic. So that delayed me another couple days. I got the mic yesterday, came from Sweetwater pretty quick. They estimated it would show up Friday. It showed up Tuesday. I ordered it Sunday. It showed up Tuesday. And so this is Wednesday, and I've unpacked it and set it up and been monkeying with it. It is an Audio-Technica digital microphone. I don't remember which. I don't want to move it because then it'll make a bunch of noise, and it has its own stand. I got some headphones. I'd never used the headphones so that I could monitor what was actually coming into the recording. So hopefully this sounds better than it has in the past. Maybe the content isn't any better than it was before, but, you know, hey, you know, what can I say? You get what you paid for, right? So now I should have a little bit more professional setup, which is kind of cool. And I kind of dig it. So now I've got a new machine, and I can monitor what the audio is that's going in there, and if any background noise is picked up or whatever. you know, I don't know. This is my first time with the new mic. Hopefully it sounds better, like I said. So, you know, I've often gotten listener feedback and had had like entire shows about regarding listener feedback. And well, now I kind of feel like it'd be a better idea just to dedicate a certain section of the show to listener feedback. Now, if I really wanted to be a good marketer and tease you so that you waited until the very end of the episode to hear your listener feedback, I would do that. But I'm not, so I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go ahead and do listener feedback now just go ahead and go with that. How about that? What do you think? Sound good to you? Now, if I could only get this to open up and do the right thing I'm going to try to kill some time while I'm trying to get this stuff to work. But just hang with me. Just hang with, you know, a really good editor would, or a good podcaster, a professional podcaster would pause like I usually did. But this time I am unfortunately not. I'm just going to make you listen. Oh, hey, when is it? April 14th is the Indiana Guitar Show. It's a Sunday. And Eddie Prather's putting it on with his buddy. And it's been really successful. If you're in the Indianapolis area, come to the Indiana Guitar Show. It's a pretty good thing. The Cincinnati Guitar Show, I think, is this next weekend, the 24th. So, and it's been pretty cool. I went to that one once or twice. And the Indiana Guitar Show keeps growing and growing. And now it's even closer to my neck of the woods. So, which is really pretty cool. So now, if I can only see this message, it would be very nice. But anyway, I guess I'm not going to look at that message. I'm going to go ahead and go back to my email and hear from Rick. He was impressed that I had back-to-back shows. He said, wow. And I said, I'm like, well, you know, you never know. He said he was, I was looking at getting a new guitar. I ran across a Kiesel and remembered that Rob, his brother, had gotten a 6-string fretless bass from them, Carvin, back in the day. And this was probably, I'm thinking it was about 1993 or 94 when he picked that up. And he picked up a 4-string bass too. And they were just, they played excellent. I loved that bass. It just played so easily. And he was really happy with it. Do you have any experience with them? They sure make some pretty stuff. I'm gonna go ahead and jump right into the Kiesel stuff here. I haven't played a Kiesel. I'm gonna say that's how you pronounce it. I'm probably wrong. So is what it is. But Carvins have always played excellent, and when I found them used, they could be really very inexpensive to pick up used. They can be very nice and plain, or they can be very ornate, really nice quilted maple tops and those sorts of things. They're really beautiful. They play excellent. You know, mail ordering them custom exactly how you want them. You know, I think they're really high quality, though. The only thing is you can't play it before you buy it unless you live in California. I think they're still in California where you would go and check them out. But yeah, they're every Carvin I think I've played has been fantastic. My friend Andy had a Carvin amp. I don't remember which model it was. It was just a 112 all tube amp, and you could get all sorts of great tones out of it, from, you know, classic rock, blues, metal. I mean, it was just, and death metal, whatever. I mean, it was really, it's really something else. It has built-in reverb. I don't remember if it was EL34 powered or 6L6 powered, but I mean, it was just, it was smoking hot and it was super loud. And it was I want to say it was an early 90s Carvin amp, and it's fantastic. So anyway, I like them. I'm just hesitant to buy something that I haven't played, although I've bought plenty of guitars on the interwebs. But you know, you've played a Stratocaster, you play a lot of Stratocasters, so you know, kind of know what you're getting into. Get back to the email. We hit Guitar Center and Sam Ash looking the other night. Neither of them carry anything worth looking at. It's like shopping at Walmart. Blah. Found a PRS custom six strings down. Six strings down. Yes. Big props to Six Strings Down in Plainfield, Indiana. That was nice. Not a great price. Priced almost like new. Well, you know, and I don't know which one he's talking about, but it depends on the model and so on. Dave usually has really good prices there for used stuff. The nicer stuff is priced appropriately. In most of the cases, that could have been a consignment piece where the guy said, "I want this," and well, Dave has to throw it on the wall and have that price on it. So he also goes on to say his daughter, my daughter and I are headed up to Sweetwater a week from Sunday to do some testing. Anything you think I should look for? Well, I don't know, man. You know, everybody's taste is their own. I have never been to Sweetwater. I really want to go. That campus looks awesome. Everything I've seen on the website and YouTube tours of the place. Anybody that's gone there has said how awesome it is and that I need to go. I typically order my strings through Sweetwater. They have great prices. I buy like, you know, 10 at a time, 10 packs of strings at a time. So I get, you know, decent prices and watch for their deals. They generally assign a salesperson to you, and which is nice. If you're talking, whenever I was looking for an acoustic pickup for my Gibson J45 acoustic guitar, I had some in mind, and I you know, called them up and ran some ideas by them, and I don't remember if I got any better pricing through them or whatever, but I mean the order was in no time, and I had somebody to talk to who was, you know, my account rep. And I mean, I'm nobody, you know, I'm not like a touring musician. People know my name or anything like that, other than maybe the folks who listen to this show. If you remember my name, then that's fine. But anyway, it's really cool. I like Sweetwater a lot. I bought this mic and these headphones through Sweetwater. I did it through the website. I just did some research and looked at reviews and just not a ton, but you know, enough over, I don't know, I spent maybe an hour or two researching the microphones. I was initially going to go with one of the Shure models, and it was like a little funny. And then I thought, well, you know, I should probably get some headphones too. And I saw the Audio-Technica stuff, and I remembered back in the 90s, I got an Audio-Technica vocal mic, and it was in partial payment for guitar lessons that I was giving at the time. And the guy told me it's a really high-end vocal mic. And I was thought, well, a Shure SM58 is really the vocal mic. It's the kind of the industry standard. Well, you know, I took it and the cash in payment for the guitar lessons I'd given and everything. I was like, oh, cool. You know, I needed a good vocal mic. So I got it. And once I started playing in bands where I was doing backup vocals and sometimes lead vocals, we'd do the sound check, and the drummer was our sound guy at the house. So when we'd reset up and everything, he'd go around and do a check, and he'd monkey with the 58s and every, you know, all that stuff. And he'd come to me and I'd do, you know, a check, one sou. And he was like, perfect. In no time. He was done with me in no time. Maybe it's just because he had me down so much he couldn't hear anyway. He didn't want to hear me, you know. But I think that I know I really think the mic was awesome and it sounded fantastic. And I just remembered how they never took a whole lot of time to dial that thing in. It just sounded great. Great response, no feedback. Everything was great from that mic. So I went and thought, you know, based on that microphone's reputation, I went and I looked at Audio Technica mics. And the one I got, this one's $150, and it seems fine. It sounds great right now. I mean, what I'm hearing, I mean, I have to hear my own voice, which is always kind of odd to hear, but you know, for right now, I'm fairly pleased. All right, so I've gone and grabbed the boxes for these this new gear I got. So it is an Audio Technica AT2020 USB Plus, and at the 2020 USB Plus, and I imagine AT is for Audio Technica. And 2020 USB Plus. It was $150, delivered in 2 days. And the headphones, which sound magnificent, I just plugged them into my machine last night and listened to some Randy Rhoads stuff and other music on YouTube, and it sounded fantastic. And what are these headphones? These are the ATH-M50Xs. It comes with a nice little pouch for them. The mic does too. And it has three different cables, one coily cable. It's the studio 1.2 millimeter to 3.0 millimeter coiled. It has the adapter to go to a quarter inch. There's the studio 3.0 millimeter straight and the portable 1.2 millimeter short with straight. And the cable, obviously, if you have three different cables, you can disconnect the cable from the headphones. Because how many times have you had headphones, a set of headphones, and then they wind up shorting out right where they connect to the earpiece, and then you know you're holding them funny, or you get electrical tape and you tape it in place so that they're right, and well, and that never works, and it's only a matter of time before that doesn't work anymore, and then they're garbage. Well, what's cool about these, and I would imagine you can get replacement cables or cords for these, unless, of course, the jack goes bad, and the jack, well, but it's a locking jack. You plug it into the headphone portion and twist it, and it locks in place, and then you know, you take the other end and plug it into whatever device you're using. The microphone actually has a monitor plug-in. So I'm plugged into the monitor, I mean into the microphone as the monitor, not my computer. And you can adjust the mix of if you're singing along with the music or whatever, or just like what I'm doing right now, just hearing my signal, if it's a nice strong signal or not. You know, you're getting it right from there. You can dial in the mix and the overall volume of what you're hearing back into the headphones. And you know, I'm fairly happy. So, yeah, and it all came within. I mean, I like I said, I ordered it Sunday, showed up Tuesday, monkeyed around with it a little bit this evening until I said, okay, I'm gonna just dive in and record a show. So, that is that. The only thing I guess I could say is a problem that I have with them is I did buy a little desktop mic stand. It can be like 6 inches tall and extend out to like a foot tall. And it has the standard threaded end that you could use any kind of mic holder or isolated mic holder that you'd have with a ribbon mic or a condenser, a studio condenser mic, that sort of thing. And that's what I used on, I had a boom stand. Well, I have a boom stand. And that's what I had the condenser mic, what I used to use for recording these. And, well, this Audio Technica mic has its own little mic stand but the connector for it is different. It's a smaller, wider threaded connection, a bolt that sticks up that you screw into. And that's my only complaint, that it's not the industry standard for connection. So I imagine maybe they have another adapter or something like that that would work. I don't know. But for right now, I have to use the little tripod stand that came with the microphone. And it's okay. It works okay. I'm not super disappointed in it, but I do feel like I have to hunch over a little bit to be sure that I'm giving the microphone a good signal. Maybe I do, maybe I don't need to. We'll see that how that goes. It seems like it's picking me up just fine, that I probably don't need to bend over or lean over at all for it to pick me up fairly well. Just need to probably speak in its direction, and that's about it. But overall, you know, if I were to give it, you know, if on a scale of 1 to 5 stars, right now I'm giving it at least a 4.5. We'll see. That opinion may change, but I'm fairly pleased with it. So back to Rick's email about anything you think I should look for. You know, Sweetwater always sends that catalog, which just makes you want to buy more stuff and get a package in the mail. And oh, they always send a little package of candy, which I usually give to my kids, but they put a lot of bit of honeys in this one. So I'm probably going to keep those for myself. Just saying. But you know, I don't think they'll have Kaizo guitars up there. I don't know. I haven't really looked, but I think they have every Fender, Gibson under the sun, and Taylor and Martin and everything like that. I'm hoping you've blocked out pretty much a full day for this visit to Sweetwater, because they seem to have everything. Just take it all in and enjoy. Of course, when it comes to like what guitar should I look for, man, I don't know. Everybody has their own taste, you know, because I can't say, oh yeah, Les Paul's the best, or a Telecaster's the best, or you know, whatever that, you know, your flavor du jour is for guitar. Because I mean, I've got a Strat and I've got a Les Paul and I've got a modified Super Strat I got in the 80s and have just modified it over the years. And you know, I guess listened long enough, I really like Telecasters too. So you know, I know that, well, all I can say is just have a great time, and I'm jealous that you're getting to go up there. So I'll just leave it at that and move on to Mike's message here. Mike, I know, is a long-term listener. He's one of the first people to start following on Facebook and messaging often and everything. So he says, "Hey, Lauren, I posted recently letting you know that I'm just getting back to the podcast. I'm trying to catch up on episodes. Right now, I'm listening to 128, which brings me to this post. Like many players, I had a dream amp for years when the Marshall JVM 410 came out. I checked it out at a local shop and fell in love. I play a variety of music due to the cover band I'm in, and I needed an amp that could do a little of everything. Well, about 12 years of waiting, I finally pulled the trigger on a 410C. I've been playing it now for about 8 months. Much to my surprise, after years of waiting, I'm not 100% satisfied. Maybe my taste changed over the years. Maybe I've matured. Unlikely, though." He puts that in parentheses. Prior to the JVM, I was playing a PV 6505 Plus. I think I've really become a fan of the tight gain structure associated with the 6L6 American high gain amps. Here's the story. Here's where the story is going to take a left turn. My bassist plays through a Kemper Profiler. I started looking into them, and he was gracious enough to come over and let me pull up some six-string tones, and boom, my mind blown. I can't believe the quality of sounds from that beast. It's unlike any fake tube amp I've ever heard. I pulled up a model of my JVM and plugged it into my JCM 900-212 cabinet, and I could not tell the difference in my sound or feel. Another reason why I'm going to go the Kemper direction is if my tastes change in the type of amp I want to play, I've got the option of the Kemper to pull up anything. Have you had a chance to look into Kemper at all? Curious what your thoughts were. I definitely never thought I would leave the world of tube amps, but these things are incredible. I've attached a pick of my current rig, well, most current, and I've added a Rocktron talk box to my board. Take care, man. Hope to hear your thoughts on the Kemper. Well, that's really, really interesting. You know, the thing is about your, you know, you wanted this amp forever or whatever, and then all of a sudden you get it and you're like, I'm not as happy as I thought I would be. It's funny how the grass can be greener on the other side, and then you get there and you're like, well, it's nice, but it's not as great as I had imagined. I mean, I've gone through a lot of gear over the years, and I'm like, I totally know what you mean. And I thought, man, this is going to be great, and it's okay. I mean, it's good and everything, but it's, you know, not everything you ever dreamed of. You know, I think we've all been there, especially if you move through a lot of gear. So I guess where I'm looking at, Mike, is that you trust your ear, really. I mean, I say that all the time, you know, on here is, you know, trust your ear. If your ear's telling you it's no good, it's no good. The funny thing I always go back to whenever I think about trusting your ear, maybe it's good, maybe it's bad, because I always thought that, you know, Van Halen's tone on the first handful of albums is just fantastic. And I imagine he changed his rig up a bit, but then he started getting, you know, the 5150 amps, and his tone changed, and, you know, like 5150 on, it changed. But his ear was evolving and changing, and his taste was changing, and he was maturing. But, you know, I'm not going to tell Eddie not to trust his ear, but, you know, he's Eddie Van Halen, and I'm not, obviously. But, you know, you trust your ear, and it evolves. I'm not saying that his tone was bad in the 90s, because, you know, Pound Cake sounds really cool. It's just different, you know. And I did see a photo of the amps that Eddie had on the 86. I want to say it was the 86 tour. And, you know, 5150, maybe his at least his studio tone changed. But he has, you know, shelves and shelves of JMPs stacked up there and plexis, and maybe metal face plexis or brush face, whatever they called. Anyway, you know, your tastes change. And, you know, I've got one guitar right now. If I ranked my guitars, there's one guitar that I like above all others. I love its tone and playability and everything. It's the best acoustic guitar I've ever owned, and I just love it. And that's that J45, a 1969 J45. Not the most desirable year of J45s by any stretch of the imagination, but it speaks to me and it works for me. And for now, it is it, until maybe I play a Banner, you know, 40s, and it goes, whoa, and then I you know, sell my truck and buy it. I don't know. Anyway, you know, that's all I can say. Now, as far as the Kemper goes, you know, again, trust your ear. If that's what really, you know, working for you, I'd say go for it. But, you know, I can't say about the Kempers or anything else, but what I will say is, in a live setting, I don't really have a problem with you using a modeling amp. I know a lot of guys playing live are using modeling equipment instead of like a tube, hauling around a tube amp for that tone, because one, they're hauling stuff around. So if it's easier to haul the stuff around and you're getting all these different tones because you're doing a cover band, you're playing, you know, one song ahead, you have to do a police song, which is a completely different tone than, say, if you're going to do a Bad Company song next, or then you're going to do a country song. And you kind of need all those options, right? And in a live setting, as opposed to, okay, let's back up. If you're in a studio and you're recording, every time you hear that playback, you're going to hear that tone. And you're going to, oh, man, the tone just could have been a little bit, if you're... use the tube amp there, maybe. That's why you go into, you know, high-end studios. They have all these different amps, or you go to a rental place and you rent these different amps or have options. You read about people recording their albums and using all these different amps. Once it's laid down on tape, it's there, and you're going to hear it forever. That's why they do tons of takes, because that one mistake that's not a cool mistake, not like when you listen to like old AC/DC stuff from the 70s when there's a little funny thing in there, oh, that's just cool. But when it's something that's just not quite right, or not a happy accident, like, oh, there's some things that like Zeppelin did, oh, it's a happy accident. Like Whole Lot of Love, the end of Whole Lot of Love, there's some happy accidents going on there. It's really cool. But, you know, in a live setting, it's in the moment, and you know, you get the tone you need to match the song and to keep the vibe going. And once that's, the moment comes and goes, and it's, once it's gone, it's gone. You follow me? So I really don't have a problem with anybody using a modeling amp or something that isn't, you know, that ultimate tone. You're hauling around all these tube amps from gig to gig. I mean, it's a convenience thing. It's a trusting your ear thing. It's what makes the most sense. Is it efficient? All those sorts of things. So, no, I don't have a problem with, I wouldn't blame you for going that route at all. So, in the words of Forrest Gump, that's all I have to say about that. Actually, that's not the last thing I have to say about that. I did just do a quick Google search on the Kemper profiling amp or profiler, and they have a bunch of different models and complete with foot switches so that you can access all your goodies. They are not cheap by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, they're not super expensive, but I mean, they're anywhere from like $1,200 to over $2,000 for a rig. So I didn't dig too terribly deep, but yeah, they're not cheap. And they do look like something like you'd be launching a space shuttle. So, anyway, I just thought I'd add that little bit of extra 2 cents at the end of that. Now then, maybe I should have done listener feedback after. I don't know. Whatever about all that. Hey, so now you may have seen the video. It's just a quick, not a great video demo of this 1976 JMP MK2 Marshall. It's a 1976, and it's a 50-watt head. It has 6505 tubes in them and ECC83 preamp tubes, which are basically the same as a 12AX7, is all I can tell. Amp is really interesting. And I need to plug into it and monkey around with it a little more. But, you know, typically I plug into the high sensitivity or the high input and not the low input. Because, see, if I plug into the high input on my JCM800, was it a 4103, 212 combo, it's 100 watts. If I plug into the high, you get, you know, high gain and it's really cool. I plug into the low, And it's a noticeable difference in the output and the tone, and it's clean. It's super clean. It's a great clean. Anyway, I try that with this JMP, and it's not the case at all. And what's funny is I don't like the input, the high input. And to my knowledge, the amp has not been modified. Nothing has been changed on it. Nothing crazy has been done to this amp. And I mean, I've taken the chassis out of it, looked inside, and it doesn't look like anything crazy has gone on in it. So I don't know. Well, maybe I need to take a closer look. But it looks all original, and I like the low input better than the high input. I don't know. I need to keep playing around with it. But anyway, there is a website I wanted to reference here, and it's called, where is it? I'm going to close this out. It is not that one either, Lauren. It is solodallas.com. If you go to solodallas.com/the-vintage-marshall-guide, it's a great article on vintage Marshalls from all the way up to the JCM 900, that series. And like my first Marshall was a JCM 900 MK3. It was the high gain master volume, 100 watt. And it actually says favorable things about those, but it says those are like the last of the good ones. And this is guy, he's kind of putting on his old man hat, you know, kind of like me. He was like, yeah, not like the good old days, you know. And I mean, I'm not faulting the guy. It's a great article. It's a fantastic article. Take some time, go to this, and I'll link to it. It's definitely well worth the read. I mean, he goes from, I'm going to scroll all the way up to the top here, talking about like the understanding the Marshall model numbers, the block logo. I don't think he talks a whole lot about the offset Marshalls, the very first ones in 1962, but he talks about the JTM 45, the block logos, and the transition to JMP, the 1987, 1959 models, what the model numbers mean, the Plexi, and you can definitely, it shows good photos. I don't think you can't click on the photos to see bigger versions of them, but you can look and see how you can discern what, you know, a Plexi face as opposed to the brushed metal face. And it's just a great, great article and a bunch of different amps that you might not think of if you were able to ever be able to find them out, obviously on the used market, like the Marshall Super PA 50 watt from 1963 or the 100 watt 1968. Those are, it looks really funny on the front, but, and if you've run into a Marshall bass amp, well worth playing it as a guitar amp too. I mean, it's just a great article. The tremolo amps, it is the, what is that model number? Anyway, I don't want to get too deep into that. I do want to talk about though, the JMP series. And when things started changing, like mine is a rocker switch era from 1976 to 1981. And these are kind of the predecessors to the JCM 800s, which I think are just fantastic. I love both amps. You know, I'm a big Marshall fan. I'm a big tube amp fan, or just a good amp, but they are very different animals. My 800's been modified, but it always sounded this way. It always performed this way. All that's really been modified on it is it has a half switch on the back of it that can knock it down from 100 watts down to 50 watts. Big deal. And added another preamp tube, so you have another half of a preamp tube in gain. So it's like, and I almost never go there unless it's like, this is what it can do, but and never really use it. So I almost think maybe I shouldn't have done that to it. But anyway, the amp just sounds fantastic, but they are very different animals. So anyway, I'm going to read an excerpt here regarding the JMP era from what mine is. Because see, before that, they were still the Marshall Master models, where they had a master volume. It was like between the Plexi super leads and all that until you went to, they had the JMP era, the 69 to 76. And those are highly sought after. I would love to get, and they had the switches on the front instead of the rocker switches. I would love to get a 1971 one because they're really awesome. And 1971 is my birth year, so I don't know what it is about that. But a lot of guys, I don't know, maybe when you get to middle age, you really start thinking, oh, it'd be cool to have something from my birth year. And most things 1971 aren't really highly sought after. But, you know, a 71 Marshall from that era, that, you know, they do fetch a decent price. So I've got some saving to do, so to speak, to actually attain one. But anyway, I'm going to jump to the 1976 to 1981 era, because that's what this amp is. So mine is a 76, and it is kind of a transition year from that JMP era to... you know, from 1969 all the way up to 81, and there are differences. So mine is a 76, and so here we are, he says. This is the part where you wanted to see, right? All you AC/DC gearheads, myself included, here at Solo Dallas Classic Rock Community want to know more about the late 70s JMPs, don't you? Well, I'll do my best to get you satisfied. Around this time, Marshall decided to upgrade the cosmetics of their amps. They started using rocker-style switches instead of the old toggle switches. Yes, this is why they call it rocker switch era. No pun intended. The Marshall logo was a bit bigger, and there was a thicker white binding on the corners as well as under the logo. The only thing is, there were many parts left on stock, so they... had to use them. So if you find a weird looking 76 to 77 JMP, it's probably because they are using some old parts to assemble them. By 1977, they were over and only used new parts. So my logo isn't really super big. It is bigger than what they had on like the early on the Plexis and stuff, the smaller, like the JTM 45s and those sorts of things. It is a little bigger, but it's not as big as the logo that's on my JCM 800, which I think they started using that in like 79 or maybe even 77. Anyway, back to the article here. An example of a mixed up. So they show an example of a mixed up 1976 JMP. Notice the old style head box and at the same time the thicker binding and bigger logo and the rocker switches. Mine is a little mixed up. Mine doesn't have that big of a logo, but it does have the four inputs. However, the two inputs on the right are blocked off. It has rocker switches, so it's a little mixed up. Interestingly, the amps for the Canadian market kept the EL34 tubes and the old toggle switches. Yeah, well, why'd they do that for the Canadians, not the Americans? Anybody else? Anyway, the new Marshall Master model. While the sales of the non-master volume amps continued steadily and well, Marshall faced a serious problem with their new product. Most people didn't like their master model. The amps, this refers to only the 22-04, because there was not enough gain at lower volumes. It was a disaster after 14 years of selling non-master volume amps, always relying on the power amp saturation. Marshall The company that made the best rock and roll amps in the world suddenly had an amp with not enough gain. Warning, lame joke coming. Well, the heads at Marshall worried with the volume on 11 to find a solution. Worked with the volume on 11 to find a solution. After many blown tubes, they decided to try something really different this time, to cascade the preamp, get extra volume, extra preamp saturation. And the on late 76 and early 77, the magic happened. It was an instant success. You had a great overdriven tones. The way this is written, they didn't edit this very well, but it's great information. I'm going to tell you, this is the side. This is just me talking. That there's a lot of great information in here, but they didn't edit the text. And so it doesn't read great. After many blown tubes, they decided to try something really different this time, to cascade the preamp to get extra preamp saturation. It was an instant success in late 76 and early 77. You had great overdriven tones at any volume. Of course, the louder it was, the better it was. It could also work as a plexi-style circuit by keeping the master on 10 and working the preamp volume. Of course, it had a unique and distinctive voice. Note, a way to find out if a 2204 had cascaded preamp or not is to use the cable test. Just get two cables, plug them in to both inputs of the amp, turn it on, and put your hand on the other end of the cables to produce sound. Theoretically, if you get sound from only one input, this means you have the cascaded circuit. If you get sound from both, you have a non-cascaded circuit. I haven't done this test myself on this amp, but when I bought it from Scott here in Indianapolis, I asked him, I said, do you know if it's a cascaded circuit? And he goes, I don't know. And I asked him, hey, could you do the two cable test? He said he did the two cable test, and he said that both of them, you got sound out of both. So anyway, I was like, oh, whatever. I mean, how bad could it be? Really, this amp has tons of gain. Just tons of gain. So it is not lacking in gain. So I think it is a late 76, but it's not one that has cascading, according to him. I'll have to do that test again just to be sure. But anyway, it's a great article. In 1976, AC/DC launched the international version of the High Voltage album, which actually was a mix of songs from the Australian High Voltage and TNT albums. Marshall realized the potential of... My wife's walking in. I'm going to pause here, so she's giving me a look. All right, she was not actually giving me the look like I was in trouble or anything. She has a cold, and she has cold medicine in her, so she's going to bed. that was the look, which is like, I'm tired. I'm going to bed. I hate this cold, and it's all your fault. Well, I guess I am kind of in trouble because I think I gave her that cold, and it is a doozy. I tell you, I took Sudafed, and usually Sudafed knocks stuff out. It didn't really touch it. It kind of tried. Kind of like me trying to fight Mike Tyson. It would not work. So anyway, she's been battling it. So that's that. I got to get back to this article I got to read. Got to keep reading here. Anyway, Marshall realized the potential of the new band and decided to sponsor them. When they got into the studio to record Let There Be Rock, they already had brand new JMP rocker switch amps. So what they used, master volume or non-master volume? The nasal and overdriven tone is unmistakable. They used the 2203 and 2204 master volume heads extensively through the years, but also they still were faithful to the old non-master volume circuits, so they almost always mixed them on stage. Power Age, Highway to Hell, Back in Black, up to the Blow Up Your Video, all recorded with amps from this era. It's hard to tell when they used what amp, but you can't go wrong with these beasts. So, I'm going to stop reading the article net there, but I'll link to it. It's great read on Marshall amps. Love it. I'm guessing that what they're saying on this article is that AC/DC during that era was using the master volume Marshalls with the cascaded tone circuit. Probably not the one that I have. However, I look at that shot of Eddie Van Halen's amps backstage on the 5150 tour in 86, and they look a lot like a bunch of Rocker Switch master volume JMPs like what I have here. And it's a really cool amp. I would guess that they have the EL34s, but I don't know. I mean, I'd it's really interesting. It's got, you know, the 6505 bottle power tubes. So anyway, it is not a block style non-master volume amp. It is the handwritten letter style, the scripted style 2203 or 2204 amp. So anyway, I really dig the amp. Read the article, enjoy the article. I'm gonna pretty much wrap it up here for this episode of the Guitar Podcast. I want you to let me know what you think of this this new microphone, and if it sounds the same as the episode like 151, 152, 153, or if it sounds better. I mean, if it's better response, I don't know. Just let me know. Love to hear your feedback. Again, I'm wrapping it up for today's episode of the Guitar Podcast. Email me with your questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Comment on the show notes if you want to, or on Facebook, whatever you want, email me. If you like what you heard today and subscribe using iTunes or something other than that lets you provide feedback, let them know by writing a review, good, bad, or ugly, indifferent. I don't care, whatever. Thanks for tuning in again. This is Lauren Hunt reminding you to trust your ear, signing off for the Guitar Podcast.